It's 6:60 on your dial for the 6 o'clock news. 30 minutes from now, listen to Don Hollenbeck's summary of the evening news. WEAF, New York.
Just Plain Bill, usually heard over most of these stations at this time, will not be broadcast today in order that the National Broadcasting Company may bring you the special program that follows. Just Plain Bill will be heard at its regular time tomorrow. Now, NBC continues its coverage of operations in Europe with a special broadcast from NBC staff in England. We take you now to London.
This is W.W. Chaplin in London.
It is now 11:30 p.m., and we hope in a few minutes to have the latest communique concerning the invasion from SHAFE, Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Force. That will be SHAFE communique number 4. We are expecting to receive it momentarily now. In the meantime, I can tell you that the invasion is still going well, though it would be a great mistake to overemphasize the tremendous successes we've had in the initial phase. SHAFE itself has made a great point of this today, calling attention to the fact that our men have now been fighting for almost 48 hours under very difficult conditions, and that they have not yet got their second wind to carry them on to new victories. Here is one late dispatch which came in just a few minutes ago from NBC's George Wheeler, who has been with the American naval forces in the Channel since before the invasion began. Wheeler tells of the loss during the first invasion phase of a United States destroyer, the name of which I am not yet privileged to disclose. He says this destroyer had gone in quite close to the French shore, and apparently one of the enemy's shore batteries got her range and just pumped her full of shells. George Wheeler says that as many of the destroyer's crew as could got off before she sank and were picked up by a nearby ship. But it's impossible at this time, he says, to say what percentage of the destroyer's crew was saved. After the destroyer was sunk, says Wheeler, the German battery was silenced within 3 minutes by the venerable battleship Nevada. Well, that just goes to emphasize what I've been saying in these broadcasts ever since the invasion began before yesterday's dawn. We're bound to have many losses in all branches of the services, and it is only safe to presume that some of them may be heavy loss. And now, as we haven't yet received that SHAFE communique number 4, which I told you we're expecting, I would like you to listen for a moment to one of the reporters who's been right in the thick of invasion activity and who's returned with a first-hand eyewitness story. This man is Robin Duff, war correspondent of the British Broadcasting Corporation, whose assignment took him across the channel with the United States Navy. And now you'll hear Robin Duff himself.
Aboard the United States ship Barnett,
very gallant veteran of Guadalcanal,
Naples, and Salerno, we heard over the speaking tube, 1,000 yards from the anchorage. The young navigator pored over his chart, and the voice continued quietly over that tube. 500 yards, 100, 50 yards. Let her go. We dropped anchor on a pinpoint bearing. Winches creaked.
The soldiers went quietly to their debarkation stations. The experience of other landings was at work,
and boatloads of men who an hour before had sat down to a steak breakfast were in the water,
milling around in the choppy seas, waiting for the hour that had come to have an almost mystic significance, H hour.
But even then, we could hear the drone of the air transports, the transports that were carrying the paratroops to land behind the defenses. As they drew over the coast, faint bursts of flak went up to meet them. But soon we saw the glare of fires, and we knew that those men had dropped to earth and done their work. And then the bombardment. For 3 hours the ship quivered, and the air pulsated with the sounds of the greatest bombardment ever conceived. 500 tons from the Royal Air Force, for each of 10 gun batteries. For each battery, the weight that came down on London in the worst raid. Ton after ton of high explosive from the naval guns. The dull sound of explosion as the paratroops used their dynamite. And then the American daylight bombers. The landing craft were just offshore. Smoke was down, and in the boats, every man was tense
waiting for the shock of that first landing. And then the heavies dropped their load. They lifted that beach right in the air, killed everything living, smashed the defenses. The taut hardness of the jaws of those American soldiers softened into a smile of almost inexpressible relief. The last bomb dropped, and it was H-hour, D-Day. It's difficult to look back at the moment, at the days and hours of anxious expectancy beforehand, at the picture in the bear of the Seine all through the day. It's difficult to look back and to make order out of the vast complexity of planning and timing and power. In front of you lies the coast of France, flat and green, broken here and there by the spire of a church or by a rise in the contours. On every side, to the horizon and beyond, a fleet of ducks and landing craft roaring their way to and from the beaches, of landing ships opening their bellies to disgorge their men and material, of destroyers and coastal craft on constant watch for the enemy's E-boats and U-boats, of battleships and cruisers, Arkansas, Nevada, Texas, Hawkins, Enterprise, Quincy, some of the proudest names of the American and British fleets, steaming close into the enemy shore, pouring in their broadsides to the German strong points. It was a picture that put a lump into your throat and left the tears not very far from your eyes. And all the time, high overhead, liberators and fortresses, marauders, lightnings, thunderbolts, and Spitfires went on their missions of attack or protection. As the small craft came back, a new fleet hove into sight. More men and material were ready for the moment when the commanders called for them. And as they came, the small craft drew alongside the Barnett. Men whose job was done had come back to their parent ship. They brought others with them. Men whose job had also been done, and who had given their lives in the doing of it. Sad-faced sailors helped the wounded aboard and carried them to the doctors. And they carried one stretcher with their gentleness that hurt in the midst of this din of battle. The man on the stretcher was wrapped in the flag of the United States. Even at the greatest moment of this greatest of all military operations, there was a time to pay respect to the men who died in helping to win a magnificent success. Success it was. The fighting on land is hard and bitter, and only the first stage has been accomplished. But that first stage has been carried through with supreme efficiency. It's been carried through by the forces of three countries, integrated, equipped, commanded, and of great courage. Thank you, Robin.
You have just heard Robin Duff,
BBC war correspondent,
who witnessed the initial phase of the invasion from a vantage point on an American naval vessel. And now, here is that communique number four, which I told you we were expecting. It reads like this, quote, Allied troops have cleared all beaches of the enemy and have in some cases established links with flanking beachheads. Inland fighting generally is heavy. An armored counterattack in the Caen area on Tuesday evening was repulsed. Enemy resistance is stiffening as his reserves come into action. The landing of troops and seaborne military supplies continues on all beaches, despite the northwesterly wind which has persisted since the assault. Shortly before dawn today, light coastal forces, while sweeping to the eastward, encountered a superior force of enemy craft. Action was immediately joined, and damage was inflicted on the enemy before he could make good his escape. Enemy coastal batteries, which were still in action today, have been silenced by Allied naval forces. It is not yet known whether all has been finally reduced. Allied aircraft have been directing the fire of the USS Texas, Captain C.A. Baker, USN, wearing the flag of Rear Admiral Carson F. Bryant, USN, and HMS Glasgow, Captain C.P. Clark, DSO, RM, who, together with other Allied warships, have been engaging inland targets behind the beaches. Allied aircraft of all types and in great strength have closely supported our land and sea forces. Early this morning, airborne operations were resumed on a very large scale, supplies and tactical equipment being delivered to our ground forces. In two operations this morning, medium and light bombers attacked large troop concentrations and military buildings close behind the enemy lines, as well as gun positions in the battle area and railway lines south of the battle area. Road, rail, and other targets, including armored vehicles, troop concentrations, gun positions, and ammunition dumps were also attacked during the morning by fighter bombers. Heavy
heavy bomber in medium strength attacked focal points on the road system in the area south of Caen early this afternoon.
Fighters escorted the bombers and also strafed and bombed railway yards,
locomotives, trains of oil tank cars, flak towers, radio installations, and airfields over a 40 to 50 mile area south and southeast of the battle area. Continuous patrols were maintained over shipping, the beaches, and the battle area. More enemy aircraft were encountered than on Tuesday, and a number of them were shot down.
That's the end of Chief Communique number 4. This is W.W. Chaplin returning you now to the NBC newsroom in New York.
And here in the NBC newsroom in New York is Robert St. John.
And here are a few bulletins that have come in while Bill Chaplin's been talking to you. The first one is a bulletin from Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force, which says that General Eisenhower has made the journey across the English Channel today to the beachhead vicinity in a Royal Navy warship. Along with him was Admiral Sir Bertram Ramsay and also several staff officers. And here's another bulletin which says that returning Marauder bomber pilots reported tonight that the French city of Coutances on the lower side of the Cherbourg Peninsula is burning. And here's something that our NBC monitors, who are sitting right outside this glassed-in studio with earphones over their heads, here's something that they have picked up today from the shortwave radio. They heard a German underground radio station reporting that Adolf Hitler is not at the Western Front at all. As a matter of fact, this German underground station said that Adolf Hitler is still at his hideaway at Berchtesgaden, and that he's been there all the time, and that this story about him being at the Western Front is just so much Nazi propaganda. And here's an interesting little story. Pilots returning from missions over the beachheads of France reported tonight that Allied aerial traffic there is so heavy that fighter planes actually have been assigned to guard the flow of this traffic and prevent collisions. Well, what that amounts to is aerial traffic cops, isn't it? These pilots say that they can see jeeps down in the streets of the French villages and towns just back of the coast. They say that emergency landing fields have now been set up, and they say that things appear to be getting under control there on the coast of France. They also said that no enemy planes were in the air in these sectors at all today. And now just let me give you a brief summary of the situation as it appears to us here in New York shortly before 6 p.m. Eastern wartime. The Allied invaders of France have been beaten. They have beaten back the first fierce German armored counterattacks. The Allied seaborne and airborne troops are said to be making considerable progress along the Normandy coast despite the stiffening German resistance. The Germans have been cleared from all of the landing beaches. In some cases, adjoining landing areas have been linked up with the beaches. Reinforced by airborne troops from a 50-mile-long train of gliders, the Allies have firmly consolidated their holdings along a curving 100-mile front between Cherbourg and Le Havre. The first big German counterattack was made against Allied forces driving inland in the area of Caen, 9 miles inland from the Channel coast. However, this assault was repulsed by the Allied forces. The German radio said that Field Marshal Erwin Rommel has thrown reserves of the German 7th and 15th Armies into the mounting struggle. However, Allied headquarters says the Allies are making considerable progress despite the stiffening resistance and bad weather. And here's the summary of communique number 4, the latest communique from Allied headquarters. It confirms that Allied troops have cleared all the beaches, and in some areas, the troops have established contact with flanking beachhead units. Well, that's the news up to 5:45 Eastern Wartime from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
Just Plain Bill, usually heard at this time, was not presented today in order that we might bring you the special program just concluded. It will be broadcast at its regular time tomorrow over most of these stations. This is the National Broadcasting Company.